Mark Cameron. Mark, now a highly acclaimed and celebrated best-selling author. Mark, you were first a cop, then a U.S. Marshal. So why law enforcement? What drew you to being a cop in the first place?
Well, I'm kind of embarrassed to say that when I was little, I wanted to be Batman. I just really looked... I watched those old Adam West shows, and when I was a kid, I used to think, man, I want to go out and help people. I want to go do that. And as I got older, I realized that there really was a group of men and women who wore a costume and cool utility belts and went out and helped people. And my dad was always a big fan of Adam 12, and so that was in our home. And then I was good friends with a young man in high school whose dad was a deputy U.S. Marshal in Fort Worth. And so one of my earliest, I was probably 14, one of my earliest remembrances of seeing a deputy U.S. Marshal was this tall guy with a big Stetson hat and a 45 pistol outside his pants, you know, no jacket on. And he got out of his truck and he put a little hood and a collar over a parking meter. And it said official business U.S. Marshals. And I thought, man, I want one of those someday. I want to have a cool bag for my parking meter. So, yeah.
That's cool. That is awesome. And eventually you would go on from a policeman to U.S. Marshals. And your stint with the Marshals brought you to Alaska. And now I'm born and raised Alaskan, and I'm going to make a bet, Mark Cameron, that you've seen more of Alaska with the Marshal Service than I ever have. What have you been some of your duties around Alaska and places you've seen?
That's a great question. I've been very fortunate. The Marshal Service is a fairly small organization anyway, nationwide, and the District of Alaska, you know, there's one presidentially appointed marshal for each district, and then that marshal has deputies that are the civil service employees, and I was a civil service employee. So I was a deputy marshal, came up here in 1998, and right off the bat, I think my first assignment when I got here was to go out and look for a guy in Dutch Harbor. And so I went out to Dutch Harbor back when they were flying the, I don't remember what they were, Electras or something like that. It was like an Indiana Jones airplane, it looked to me like. And we flew out to Dutch Harbor and spent some time out there. And then I was, there was a homicide down in Southeast Alaska, and I was part of the Alaska Fugitive Task Force, same thing I write about in the books. And I was a man tracker, a part of the man tracking team at the time. And this guy had... chopped another guy's head off and run into the woods, and so they couldn't find him. And so they had asked us, the Alaska Fugitive Task Force, to come down and help him out, and or help them out, and spent some time on Prince Wales Island looking, finally found the guy. Been out to Western Alaska a lot, up and down the Kuskokwim River and the Yukon Rivers, and up on the Kobuk and up to Kaktovik, and yeah, all over. The Marshal Service mission is so broad, whether it's civil seizures, you know, that come about in a trial, or whether it's looking for fugitives or witness protection or judicial protection. It allows us to do a lot of different, really varying things.
That's an amazing answer, and I love how you just kind of wove into your answer. Sure, the guy had severed somebody else's head, then we went and found him. What was that like, and what was going through your head as you're chasing this guy who has literally done the unthinkable? What must you be thinking?
It's funny you say it that way, because I think both my one of my sons is a doctor now. He was in law enforcement for several years, and my other son is an Anchorage police officer, and we kind of get inured to the, you know, to telling stories, and we kind of let those little violent things, we're a little more used to them. And I have plenty of bruises on my shins when we go to church or functions or parties where my wife kicks me under the table saying, these are nice people. Stop telling those stories like that, you know. And, but I, you know, you do have to kind of get in a tactical or strategic mindset, and especially as a tracker, you put yourself in the mind and, you know, in the footsteps, if you will, of the person you're trying to find. And tracking is not all just looking at a footprint on the ground. It's looking at all kinds of signs, the weather, the, you know, and also when it comes to tactical tracking, we generally track with, you know, you're so focused on the ground and the area around the ground and, you know, leaves and branches and whatnot, that there's always somebody that's not tracking, kind of looking over your shoulder, making sure you don't get hurt by whoever you're tracking. So, you know, you do place yourself in a bit of a, you know, you're kind of a tactical mindset when you're doing it, but it's kind of a neat science. So the tracking part of it is great. And even the regular job of a fugitive hunting is really tracking. You're looking for sign, and sometimes those signals and signs are on the internet. Sometimes they're interviewing people, but it's the same sort of gum, you know, shoe leather science.
Talking here with Mark Cameron, best-selling author, latest book out, Stone Cross, an Arliss Cutter novel. And the little byline is, "In the wilds of Alaska, killing is a way of life." And I've got my own hard copy right here, and I suggest you go get yours. It's really, really good, Mark. It's a fascinating read, and I won't give anything away because I'm going to be further ahead than somebody listening in the novel, but I just want to say it's fascinating, and it's we'll get to one of the coolest emails I've ever gotten in my life, and that's from you, where you said that you'd like to talk to me, but you're right now right in the middle of your latest Tom Clancy thriller and working on Jack Ryan. We'll get to that, but I want to talk and stay right here for just a minute. You sure. Retire from law enforcement and decide to focus your attention to your writing career. So up to the point of retirement, was writing just a hobby for you?
Well, it kind of overlapped. It worked out. I was very fortunate in the overlap. I had written a couple of Westerns and then broke into thrillers because there just weren't that many people reading Westerns anymore. I wrote Westerns under the name Mark Henry, Mark with a K and Henry. And wrote a couple of those, and then ghost wrote some of those for another author where my name did not appear on the cover, just kind of starting out. And as long as I didn't write about the Marshal Service, you know, and reported it and that sort of thing, then they were fine with it. And I never could really write about anything to do with what I did for a living. And so I started writing thrillers about, oh, I'd say a year and a half, maybe 2 years. Actually, I started getting published, started writing them before that, but my first thriller, a Jericho Quinn thriller, was published about a year and a half before I retired. And it just started to get problematic. I couldn't really ever tell anybody what I did for a living when it came to the publicity. I didn't want to leverage that, you know, federal job. It just seemed wrong for me to, even when it wasn't against the rules, it just felt wrong to leverage that to try to sell books. And so I really shied away from that, which kind of bugged my publishers. And so when I turned 50 years old, I had the opportunity to retire early, and I just kind of smoothly moved over into writing thrillers and wrote, I think I was on my fifth Jericho Quinn when the Clancy opportunity came up. And in fact, I just started working on the Arliss Cutter series. We'd had enough success with the Jericho Quinn kind of over the top action thrillers that the publisher was willing to, and since I wasn't working with the Marshal Service anymore, willing to let me try my hand at a kind of a more mainstream, not military kind of a thriller about Arliss Cutter, which is a deputy marshal based in Alaska.
And again, I'm just going to say this book, and it's the first I've read in your series, and I'm imagining, just based on what I'm reading, that you can jump into the series anywhere you want, or probably any of your books, including the Jericho Quinn novels, sure, and just jump in and read as a standalone. But the entire series is undoubtedly going to be in my library before it's over. Again, talking here with Mark Cameron. That's Mark, M-A-R-C, Mark Cameron. And the book is Stone Cross. You got to get it. Anybody listening to this, Mark, that's themselves considering maybe a second act or third act in life, I'm curious as to any advice you'd offer for somebody wanting to follow their dreams, maybe no matter where they're at on the ladder of life. What would you offer them?
Yeah, that's a question I get quite a bit. And I tell my kids, I tell aspiring writers, I tell the best thing that we can do is get your nose out of your phone. Go live life, go do things. Don't read about other people doing things. It's so easy for all of us to get basically just plug ourselves in like, you know, peripherals to our computers or our phones and just let life be lived before us. And I write two series every year, which keeps me working a lot of hours. I enjoy what I do, but if I spend all the time on my phone, I would never be able to get this many words on paper. So I don't think it matters whether you're writing or anything else. There's just a lot of time. I had a guy I respected, a professor in college, that my freshman year of college kind of took me aside, and I guess he saw a weakness in me, and he said, you know, Mark, you will never amount to your full potential unless you figure out how to utilize those 15-minute segments of your life that everybody else is wasting. And I really took that to heart. I was 18 years old, and I remember one of my friends, a deputy marshal, and I were, we'd gone to move a prisoner or something, and we were deadheading back, so we didn't have anybody with us. And I was writing Westerns already at the time, and I was getting a little money. I mean, my wife was saying, you know, like, go, she'd roll up a newspaper and swap me on the butt when I came in and said, go rise a couch or go rise a freezer or something like that. So certainly wasn't, you know, getting rich at all. Still not. But I'd take my friends to lunch or dinner or whatever. And so my friends, he's kind of a little bit sour grapes, but friendly, said, you know, it must be nice to have this other income and all that, you know, this writing job. And he goes, how do you do it? And I looked up at, we were at an airport, I don't even remember where. And I looked up at him and I said, because I am not sitting here playing Angry Birds on my phone right now. I'm writing while we're sitting here.
I love it. So that is
if that excellent. Answers your question.
Oh, it does fantastically. I love it. And I would go back and just say perhaps it wasn't a failure he saw in you, but maybe saw such potential that he wanted to ignite it and fuse. That's the deal.
You obviously didn't know me as an 18-year-old.
Yeah. Right. Well, writing has taken you, if the Marshall Service took you all over Alaska and potentially the country, I guess writing's taking you around the world. And most recently, as I alluded to a moment ago, into the mind of Jack Ryan. So how did this come about in your life such that the Tom Clancy estate came to you and said, hey, why don't you take over this Jack Ryan series? What was that like?
Well, it was very, you know, I owe it all to Mark Graney, the guy that was writing before me. I met Mark at a writer's conference called BoucherCon after Anthony Boucher, a critic and writer back in the 50s, but or maybe even earlier than that, I can't remember. But I had gone to this convention in Long Beach, met Mark, heard that he was writing the Jack Ryans, and, you know, he was kind of... he already had his own series, and just a super nice guy. And we went to dinner. We got invited to dinner by the same bookstore owner. And so I sat next to him, just chatted with him. We became acquaintances, and then the next year we got to be better friends. And over the years we became friends. And I was at a BoucherCon in 2015 maybe, and he approached me and said, hey, what are you working on right now? And I told him, and he had done 7 Jack Ryans up to that point. He actually wrote with Tom Clancy before Clancy passed away for 2 books and then 5 more subsequently. So Mark came to me and he said, how about I do a cover blur or a cover quote for you, a blurb for your next Jericho? And I said, man, that would be amazing, because writers hate to ask other writers for cover quotes because we know how busy we each other are. And, you know, and I've been very fortunate that CJ Box and Brad Thor, the only 2 people I've ever asked for cover quotes, and they've both given them. And my publisher's gotten other folks to give them, but I've not had to ask and been lucky that way. And so Mark coming to me was pretty incredible. Unbeknownst to me, I sent him a PDF of the Jericho that I was working on. And unbeknownst to me, he was thinking about stepping away from the Jack Ryans, and he took my manuscript and passed it along to his editor, Tom Colgan with Putnam, who works with the Clancy Estate on these books, and they read it. And then we were in Florida, my wife and I were in Florida researching the first Arliss Cutter book, Open Carry, and we were on the beach and just kind of taking a break, and my phone rang, and it was my literary agent, Robin Rue. And I guess I must have had this stricken look on my face because my wife took a picture of me while I was talking to her. I think she thought somebody had died or something historically bad had happened because I looked so terrified. But Robin said that the Clancy, that Tom Colgan with Putnam had called and that they wanted me to do the next Jack Ryan that Mark had recommended me. So I immediately fell down with a terrible migraine and worried about, you know, how was I possibly going to do something like that. And interestingly enough, I talked to Tom Colgan, the editor. He's a great guy to work with, by the way. But I talked to him later about how terrified I was. And I said, you know, if the person you asked to write a Tom Clancy Jack Ryan novel, because they're big, multifaceted novels, and frankly, half the people are going to hate you because you're not Tom Clancy.
Right.
If that person was not terrified, he or she was the wrong person to ask to do the gig. So anyway, that's the long story about how it happened.
I love a couple of things about that, that you're one, I wanted to use air quotes around the researching in Florida for the book Open Carry on a beach. didn't pass the smell test. And then the other thing I love that your wife is documenting this horror stricken look on your face with a photograph. I love it. She didn't know what was going on,
but
that's awesome. That is great. Well, very, very good. And congratulations on that, by the way, because it's not just like you're, you know, the story you told about the friend sitting there, man, it must be nice. Well, it must be nice getting the call from the Clancy estate. Well, you had to put yourself in the position to be there to be asked. And one is just taking action on the desire to write. Secondly would be going to BoucherCon. You went and you took your own time and money to go to a to an event. And I think that's really like the key to success is actually acting, just such as you said, you know, getting off the phone or whatever the whatever device du jour is that's distracting you from your dreams and just going for it. Alaska.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Mark, Alaska is a special place, and you know that. Obviously, you've made it your home all these years, and even post-retirement, you continue to live here. As you go around the world talking to people about your books, what's the reaction? What's the main reaction you get about being an Alaskan?
That's an interesting question. It's one of the places that people, a lot of people don't realize it's part of the United States. They think it's Canada. In fact, when you go to other... And we always joke about it while we're here, but I've seriously had people ask me if we take American money in Alaska. It's we have a reputation, especially in non-English speaking countries, you know, that with so many reality shows about Alaska, that's, you know, you and I know that they're not real reality shows, but I should say most of them are not. That gives me an out.
That's right.
Friends in
good,
reality
good,
TV business.
Good save.
So that's what a lot of people see. And then, of course, you know, they see me and my friends on Facebook out either fishing or hunting or in the, on the river or looking at bear tracks or whatever. And so it's kind of, you know, it's hard to downplay how larger than life Alaska is. I wanted to get here my whole life. And so my wife and I go to Rarotonga in the Cook Islands, which is down kind of between Fiji and Tahiti, every year for a couple of months. And in fact, this will be the first year with COVID. This will be the first year for in 6 years that we haven't gone. Mm. But we have friends there and we rent a house. And we first found out we were going to do the Clancy. And I say we because my wife reads everything and helps me with research. And I bounce all the plots off of her. We really put ourselves through a little Tom Clancy University and, you know, read everything and, you know, I'd write and read and research. But so the people on the island knew I was this Alaskan with a kind of a scraggly beard and half bald headed and, you know, working tight. And we stay in a place where there was traffic, you know, foot traffic in front of us on right off the beach. And I don't write that off on my taxes or call it research, by the way. So talking about your smell test, I am working while I'm there, though. So I have this whole mug full of Blackwing 602 pencils that I write longhand with when I'm plotting. And people would walk by, and I thought they would be more interested in talking about the Clancy, but they always want to talk about Alaska. Mm. They just really want to talk about this place we're from, you know.
I don't take that for granted. You know, having been born and raised here, as I mentioned, and done some limited travel just in a couple different places and find the same thing, that people are extremely curious. And of course, we blame some of the weather maps as to some of the curiosities. If people don't know where we are and whatnot. But
oh, yeah, a little island down by Hawaii right, on the maps, right?
Right, in igloos. So, well, again, mm-hmm. the book is Stone Cross. It's the latest in an Arliss Cutter series. And the author is Mark Cameron, M-A-R-C, Mark Cameron. And Mark, I'm so impressed that, and I don't know why that you're having been here in Alaska. Just when I first discovered you, and it was, man, this guy is here in Alaska. I find that so amazing. Why wouldn't you be? It's an amazing place to live and call home.
That's
and
right.
I think you're probably the envy of many of your author friends that you do get to live in such a unique place.
Oh yeah, we talk about that all the time. And my wife and I have been fortunate to go out and do some post law enforcement trips where we go out and help villages with literacy and writing their own stories and going up and down the Kobuk River with the Northwest Arctic Burrow and then along the Kuskokwim with books and badges and things like that. So I've tried to get some other writers involved in that. And I think in coming years, there's a lot of them that have expressed interest in coming up because it is such a unique place. And it lives. That's the neat thing about Alaska, and of course your listeners will know this, but it lives up to its reputation. And when you say, you know, step out of the RV and into the food chain, it's really true up here. And so,
right.
It makes writing about Alaska, particularly a book like Stone Cross, which deals with some really kind of heavy issues about the bush and, you know, Native issues and problems they face and the resiliency and stuff like that. I think, you know, I was really worried that it would be too heavy, but I showed it to several of my Yupik friends that live out there. And they told me to be honest. You know, there's always going to be people that don't like the book, but told me to be honest. But honestly, it's even heavier than that in real life. And it just, Alaska, for all its good and all its bad, it lives up to the hype, at least in my mind.
Mark Cameron, thank you for your time today, and best of luck. The book is Stone Cross. Thanks again for being here.
Hey, great. Thank you very much, Chris.